There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. Travis Bond's going to join us later on in the hour. Also, we're going to update, hopefully get the latest update here on the remnants of Laura. I don't think it's even a tropical storm anymore, but it's still, you know, the cause of a lot of rain out there. I'll get an update from Dr. Bill at about 1:35 or so. And my buddy right now, Jason Johnson from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, joins me. Hey, Jason.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
I'm good. And I guess, first of all, tell folks a brand new issue of Lanyap out now.
Yes, yeah, brand new issue on stands and online at lanyapmobile.com.
And
lots of good stories.
Yeah, and we talk about this a bunch. People to get signed up. It breaks down. How much per day?
I'm supposed to know this, Sean.
21 cents. Jason.
21 cents.
Okay.
Yeah. It's 21 cents per day. Yes.
I'll do Jason's part. Well, Sean, it's only 21 cents per day if you break it out that way, if you want to sign up and get all that great reporting we do at Lanyap. Does that sound
less
good?
Less than a cup of coffee is what
yes.
The tagline is.
See, I don't buy coffee, but yeah, so it's 21 cents. That's what sticks with me. All right, we'll come back and talk about how to get signed up for lanyapmobile.com. But I got to talk about this. You have one of your stories over at lanyapmobile.com. New Police Citizens Advisory Committee will begin meeting. And I bet you I was not the only one that had the reaction reading that headline going, didn't we have this before? What is this new? Is this, what's going on here?
It's one of those what's old is new again kind of stories. So it is a new composition of members, at least the ones that have been appointed so far. But the idea of this type of committee first arose 4 years ago after we had an officer-involved shooting here in Mobile. And for a number of reasons, it kind of ran off the rails a little bit and never really actually got going. And then with everything that's been going on the past few months, the discussion kind of kicked back up and they're trying it again.
I remember, I think, correctly, from back in 2016, it was put together and there was a lot of discussion about, back then, about the body cam, right? And the body camera video. And then this,
right.
As part of the discussion around this, it was agreed to, I guess, in negotiation that this police advisory committee would be put into place. And yeah, to be frank with you, I mean, I remember all the discussion of putting it in place in 2016, and then I don't know that I don't remember hearing anything again about it.
Well, so one of the things I'm trying to do over the next week or so is track down some of the original members and kind of ask them for themselves what happened 4 years ago. But the general idea of what went wrong, according to the city council members, was that you had a group of people that were kind of divided in what they wanted to be. And if you recall back then, there was a big discussion about, is this going to be a board that has the authority to subpoena records and look into disciplinary actions, or is this going to be a conduit for the community to reach out and talk to the police department? And really, based on the authority that the city council has, the latter is what it became. And you had a board with people who were appointed that were very pro-police, and then some people who were very, I guess, pro-community. Maybe, I don't want to say anti-police, but they were a little less supportive. How about that?
Yeah.
And they could never really establish what they wanted to do before things got going. And so what the council is trying to do now is kind of be more thoughtful in their appointments and really kind of give some guidance on what the mission is going to be.
Okay. And
you about to ask me what that mission is?
Yes.
Well, they're deciding that too, and that's kind of what this story was about. See, these are
where's
sort
the
of
finish
details.
Line?
They were
right. Where's the? I ask this on a lot of things. I'm not trying to be, you know, broken record, but it's worth setting up. If you're going to impanel a group to do something, what is their? What's the MO? What's the business? What's the mission of this group?
Well, see, that's kind of one of the things that the story I wrote this past week gets into. The council, this kind of grew out of a meeting where they were talking about that. You know, where they were like, what are the requirements going to be? How often are they going to meet? What sort of the guidance we're going to give them? But you already had some council members that had appointed people they wanted to sit on the committee. And basically what they said last week was, let's get them together and convene to get a vision that is their own. And then we will come in after that and change the ordinance if we need to, or set, you know, they need to meet every 2 weeks, every 2 years, whatever it is. But they said, if you're going to be the guys driving this committee, you need to be involved in building what you're going to become.
Part of this is the process of selecting the people. This is not, it's no indictment or non-indictment of any individual on it, but somebody who would want to be on this, okay, I have a, there's going to be exceptions, there always are, but somebody would want to, they must have strong opinions one way or another. You see what I'm saying? Like the motivation to want to be on this. It's almost like a self-defeating system. If you're trying to get people that are just regular folks that are kind of just open to look at the subject, they're not going to be petitioning to be part of this. It's going to be people that are, you know, one way or another, lean strongly one way or another, that be like, oh, I want it because they have some very strong opinion about it.
Well, see, I agree with that generally, but I do think there's kind of a middle ground, and it's not necessarily we want to change policing or we want to support police. It's more or less of we want to make a divide that exists between some aspects of the Mobile community and the police department shrink. Right. And so you can, if you look at it from that perspective, you can see kind of an individual, hopefully, that could weigh both inputs from community members and from police officers who are actually doing the job to try and bring people to an understanding.
Yeah, you talk about, but you talk about this, and that's what I would like to see. I would like to see that it's not there to just say, this is my side, that's my side, and we're going to, you know, we're going to dig our heels in. But you go back to 2016. And your story at LandNetMobile.com, and you say, during the meeting, Richardson, so you're talking about Councilman Richardson, raised concerns about mandated requirements for the PCAC members, which also proved to be contentious when the first group was assembled in 2016. To have members better understand what it's like to be a police officer, they're required to participate in a ride-along with an MPD officer and complete a six-hour orientation course and to meet with the chief of police quarterly. Said some of the original members didn't either they refused or didn't meet the requirements 4 years ago. Why is that a bad thing? I mean, why, if you're going to try and talk about policing, shouldn't you have some firsthand knowledge?
I would think that you can't go wrong by knowing more about your subject matter, for sure. And I've done some of those things just as a reporter. One of the things they do to kind of try to bridge the gap with the news media is invite us at least once a year to go out to the range, and we go through a simulator and all these things you've seen on TV when they have reporters do that. And but it wasn't necessarily that anybody thought these things are horrible that they're asking us to do. It was more that these are volunteer members of an unpaid committee, and you're committing them to do XYZ. And one of the things that Fred Richardson brought out was that there's all these things you have to do to get the police perspective, but there's not much that in the ordinance requiring you to meet with the citizens X number of days or talk to, you know, this religious leader in this community. And so he was just trying to find some kind of parity, and that was one of the things, these little details that they're trying to iron out. But in the meantime, they said, why don't y'all get together and meet while we try to, instead of arguing over these little details for months and months and doing nothing, why don't y'all start meeting, getting to know one another, and getting an idea of the direction you want to move in?
But it's not the, you know, Citizens Oversight Committee. You know what I'm saying? It's not an oversight of citizens. I mean, and they're all citizens by default, whether they're in law enforcement or not, right? They
right.
Saying, like, well, you know, oh, well, why, if they have to go do this to understand police, is it, well, most people would understand what it's like to be a citizen.
Sure.
Yeah, and it seems like that's a base.
Joel Davis pointed that out. We all know what it's like to be a citizen. We don't all know what it's like to be a police officer.
Right. I agree with that. Why is that not?
I would say this, though, just to play devil's advocate. I mean, there are all types of review boards that are internal to the police department. There are plenty of people that review what the police do that are either pro-police or police themselves. So, you know, just for the sake of argument, if you don't have a group of, you know, very pro-cop people reviewing it, it's not like there's no one else involved in the system doing that. How much of each perspective you're weighing as this group is one of the things they're really trying to iron out on the council level, and hopefully one of the things that the committee will have a better idea of where they want to be once they get together and start figuring out where they want to go.
I know a lot of this is in the preliminary states here for this new incarnation, but did you hear, I don't know if they said, will people in this committee have more access to information about a case or an interaction between law enforcement and a suspect than like you or I would get? I mean, do they have an extra pass card here?
It seems like they would not, and that's mainly because the authority the council itself has over the department is really limited. It's under the purview of the mayor's office. So, I mean, it's sort of the way that Congress and the president, the administrative part of the government is separated. It's the same thing. The council, there's been some back and forth about whether or not they have the authority to request and subpoena records. Generally, when they ask for information, the department will give it to them. Fred Richardson and at least another councilman have suggested if the committee wants some information, go to the council and the council will get it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't really been kind of ironed out whether or not that's actually going to fly. But I guess the real important thing is that so far it doesn't seem like any role in this committee would be to take action to do anything to an officer or to the department. I mean, they don't really have that kind of authority. I think at most they could probably recommend something and put it before the council. And even then, the council's authority is limited by the way the government is set up.
Yeah, so, I mean, would the council then, say the committee comes up with something, they want to make a statement that something's good, bad, whatever, do they hold their own presser, or do they report to members of the council that then in council meetings says, all right, our committee got back with us, and the committee says this?
Well, see, that's one of the kind of details they want to figure out. That was another thing that Councilman Manzi said contributed to the downfall of this 4 years ago, was that they didn't have, you know, you didn't even have city email addresses or a city labeled Facebook page. They want it to be more a function of the city, at least in how it appears. It'd be more organized this time around. And so I imagine the members are going to figure out, do we report to the council every week and say, this is what we're considering, this is what we're hearing? Do we compile that in a monthly report? Those are the kind of things that they're going to have, I guess, the authority to figure out how they want to get that information to the police department or to the council or to the mayor's office.
All right. There he is, Jason Johnson with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Somebody wants to get signed up. How do they do it?
They go to lanyapmobile.com. We have specific instructions there. And also on any story that you click on, when you see the paywall pop up and you go, oh, I want to read this, there's very easy steps on how to get signed up and get access to all the new content and all our backlog of content for the last several years.
And I will say, and future content, because y'all heard it. So Jason said he's working to find out what happened, to getting a specific reaction from the people that were on that advisory committee back in 2016. So I'm hoping to see that information soon.
Yeah, me too. If any of them are listening, give me a call.
Very good. Jason, as always, man, I appreciate your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, Jason Johnson with Lanyap. And so, yeah, this is a different, it's like a new incarnation of that Citizens Advisory Committee. So when you hear about it and say, didn't we do something like that before? We did. And that's what's going on here. It sounds like there's still a lot of lines to be filled in on exactly what they'll do and in what capacity they'll exist. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line, they're both 343-0106. How about that?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. I've been here the whole time. You've been here the whole time. So it's really not welcome back. It's just this part we start talking again. All right, 125 FM Talk 106.5, and let's call this show Midday Mobile. Let's call it a Friday. All right, and let's say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Angelo.
Hey, Hey, how's it going today, Sean?
It's good. It's good. It's Friday. I actually saw, it's gone now. There was some blue sky out there for a second, but the cloud moved back over. But getting ready for the weekend, and I want to talk about it with people during the week don't have a chance to come in and check out all the stuff we talk about. Y'all are open Saturdays as well.
We are. Saturdays 9 to 2. Monday through Friday, of course, 9 to 5. Saturdays have been increasingly busy because so many people are busy during the week and don't really have the energy to try to get out during a lunch break or something like that. Weekends, however, have been super busy for us, answering a lot of questions. So many people have questions about gold and silver. They want to see all the different options that are available, and they're pleasantly surprised to see how much inventory we have in stock and ready to sell.
And that's the key, right? I mean, when people are looking for this and they're going to, you know, they don't have it, you'll have it.
Yes, sir. We have been staying very busy from the very beginning of all of this drama, staying ahead of the curve on getting gold and silver in. Matter of fact, I think we probably have more gold and silver in stock now than we have had, quite frankly, in years. And the reason for that is we need it. People are coming in every day buying larger quantities of gold and silver. They're watching the news. They're looking at gold and silver prices going up. They're looking at the government signing, you know, another trillion here, another trillion there, and free money we're going to, electronically send to everybody, and they're all looking down the road and saying, when that bill comes due, what's going to happen to the dollar?
No joke. So let's talk about prices right now for precious metals. What have they done today? What about the week? Kind of where's it sit?
Course of the week, it was up a little bit Monday, then it dropped where people were profit taking, and it slowly crept back up again. So it looks like it's going to continue this trend, in my opinion. It's going to rise and fall during the week, but gradually increase in prices over time. Right now, gold is somewhere around 1960, 1970 an ounce, at 1900, by the way.
Yep.
And silver is around $27, $27.50 an ounce right now.
Yeah, and
so
just I mean, a year ago, silver, I mean, it was, what, half, maybe half that?
Yeah, almost half of that. A year ago, silver was around $15 or $16 an ounce. Gold was around $1,500 an ounce. So huge bumps on both of those products. And quite frankly, I expect to see more of that down the road.
Yeah, while we're talking, about precious metals, and then I think about the discussion we have on coins, can you help me with a little something? What do you know?
Sure.
And I know y'all, if people can hear more of the discussion on Two Guys and Some Change on Tuesday nights, but this whole thing, I first saw it back on Independence Day weekend. I stopped at the Dollar General, and they only wanted dollars. They had no change. You see signs everywhere about change. I went today to try to get some change, get a dollar broken to quarters so I could pay for a overpriced vacuum, car vacuum thing at a gas station, and they said, nope, can't give
right.
them to you. So what's the story? What's real here? What's happening?
Well, the reality is that to a degree, the U.S. Mint has reduced production, but to a greater degree, banks have reduced distribution. So you think about it, the bank behind us closed down for a month. You couldn't get anything. Everything they had, whether it was in their safety deposit boxes or in their vaults or in their cash drawers, was all locked down and unavailable for almost a month. So whatever change they had there, they were not releasing out into circulation. And when you go to get change, since you're not allowed to go into the bank and pick up a box of quarters or a bunch of pennies or whatever it is you need for your business, you have to go through the drive-up and get a handful of change. You know, years ago, I worked with somebody in the convenience store business. They would go through $500 worth of change twice a week. Now they can get $10 or $20 through the drawer, and that's all the bank is allocating. It's more of a matter of distribution than it is of actual shortages, in my opinion.
I didn't think about that fact that, I mean, we can't go, you got to make an appointment or whatever to go in the bank. So that's like one of the pinch points on this.
That's one of the pinch points. Another is that people that are taking stuff to Coinstar, that's being picked up by Brinks or whoever it is that's managing those things, and then they are sitting on a lot of that stuff. They're packing it, they're rewrapping it. They're not getting those out to the banks as quickly. Banks are closed. Again, it's more of a distribution concern than it is a we don't have enough coins in the world to make change. And people are starting to hoard everything.
Yes.
I mean, we first saw that obviously with toilet paper. Now we're seeing it with a lot of other things as well.
One day I will be master of the world when everybody needs my big water jug full of pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters.
There you go. We'll rule everything, Sean.
That's right. I'll say, I have the rest of the change. It's me. All right. If people want to get advice on gold and silver, buying it, looking at the great gift items as well, how do they find y'all?
We're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Come on by. They can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. And if you want to sort of browse the new and cool stuff as it's coming in from the convenience of your own home, check us out on Facebook and on Instagram.
All right, Angela, you have a good weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
You too, Sean. Have fun.
Yeah, I will for sure. That's Angelo checking in for Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Another buddy of mine, too. I've known this guy a long time. He's got a business that I understand he's about safety and training and job science, but I have a cursory knowledge of what he does. He has a full-on knowledge. Travis Bond joins us from Total Backing Safety here in just a couple minutes on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad to have you here. A buddy of mine in studio, Travis Bond, and known the guy for a long time. And his business, I think I got a pretty good idea, and he was telling me about it. I know last year you and I were standing waiting to weigh in fish at a tournament. You're telling me about the business, but I want to make sure I understand Total Backing Safety. First of all, welcome to the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sean. I'm glad to say I've known you now for about 10 years when I first moved here. I met you and Bob Baumhauer at the restaurant when you were doing a night bid out there.
Yeah.
I was a fan from then on.
Well, I appreciate that. We've been friends all these years, and you've told me, and maybe I'm just dense, I kind of have a general idea, I think, of what y'all do, but I want you to explain Total Backing. What's your elevator speech? Somebody said, what do you do, Travis?
So what I do is I help general contractors and subcontractors stay in compliance with OSHA standards and guidelines. So our first priority at Total Backing Safety is to save lives. We want to make sure that, you know, John Q. Public can go to the construction site and know that he's been trained properly, that he is safe, he's keeping others around him safe, and he can go home with a little bit more money in his pocket from working at a job site. And everybody gets to follow the rules, and there's no fines, and everybody has lived and survived, and no arms cut off. And we're a part of that with the training we provide and the audits that we provide to our clients.
Okay, so are you working with the contractor, or are you working? How does that work? Do they hire you, or who?
Basically, the general contractor will call us and say, "Hey, this is the type of work we have. We're building, you know, this hospital, or we're building this bank, or we're building this new building, or we're doing some demos, and may have had an issue with an OSHA inspector showing up, and the last thing they want to do is have another one."
Yeah.
So they'll call in me and my team, and we'll assess the situation. First thing that we're going to do is we're going to look at all their records that is required to have as a subcontractor or a general contractor.
Like paperwork stuff?
Paperwork, things like documentation of training, super important. We're also going to look at your injury logs. I want to see where you've had the most problems.
Okay.
Have you had hand injuries? Have you had eye injuries? Have you had face injuries? I want to see what amount of training that particular company has done for their employees to make sure that they've done what they can do to prevent those things from happening. And if they fall a little short every now and then, that's okay. We come in with the proper training. And the good thing that separates us from other big safety companies is I'm a small local business. I deal with people just like you and me who have businesses here in town, in Mobile, in Daphne, and my prices are going to cater to that. I'm not going to come in with this big wig across the board pricing for somebody that maybe only have, you know, 20 or 30 employees.
Right, so you can customize.
Absolutely. I mean, for somebody that has 500 employees, it doesn't do them any justice, or I'm not benefiting them by charging them that price. If they're asking me for the training, I'm going to cater that pricing to their 20 or 30 employees, and it's a win-win situation for everybody.
All right, you talk about this training, so, and then of course having the documentation to show that. Is it a classroom setting? Do you go? How does that work?
A lot of the training that I do will be at the client's office. That's where they feel more comfortable. They're used to their supervisors there. I also do have sites that I use to train. And basically, it's a lot of hands-on. I'm thankful, knock on wood, can say that nobody's fallen asleep in any of my classes.
Good.
Everybody has passed, and I make it very much where everybody is involved. It's like a big toolbox talk. We call it a tailgate meeting.
Okay.
We're sitting there. We're picking up PPE. We're learning how to use it correctly. We're documenting it. We want to see that the guys that are doing the training know how to do it correctly. And then I will sign off as total backing safety, saying that they have had this proper training and that they are competent in what they're doing.
And those documents are like what goes out?
Those are records. What I have here in front of me is what's called the top 10 OSHA violations.
I wish I had my top 10 music.
Oh, yeah. Hey, right.
Here they are.
And a lot of people may not know this, but people in my industry do. The number one cause for fatalities and or citations is what's called falls, whether it be fall protection or fall protection training. You know, in our industry, you can give somebody a harness to wear to make sure they don't fall, but you're selling them short, and you're not going to be in compliance if you don't have documentation as a contractor or a subcontractor that says they have had proper training in fall protection, they know what the risks are, they know how to wear their PPE correctly. Here's a document that says they know how to do that, Mr. OSHA Inspector. Thank you.
So how to put on the harness, how to...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because a lot of guys don't know.
Right.
You know, and we have a lot of guys that are on our job sites that, you know, a lot of them don't all speak English, so we provide the training in Spanish as well, because as the employee, you have certain rights. As the employer, you have certain rights as well, but one of those things that you have to do and you have to document is the fact that you have trained your employees for the hazards that are in their work area, so you can say you've done your due diligence to keep them safe and others around them.
I mean, you're talking about this customizable thing. I guess you could... One size doesn't fit all, because there may be a job that there's no climbing, there's no need for a harness, right?
Correct.
Or one that absolutely needs.
Right? Absolutely. And they need to have that, that training documented. And a lot of that training has to have retraining after anywhere from 3 to 5 years. There's a lot of certifications, me even as a trainer and as an instructor, that I have to re-qualify for as well.
What else? You talking about falls out there. What else makes...
Well, on the top 10,
stands out? Yeah.
The top 10 for 2019 goes like this. Fall protection, over 6,000 citations, U.S.-wide. Then hazard communications. This is how to create the work plan safely for what you're about to be involved with.
Okay.
How to communicate hazards correctly. The next one would be scaffolding. I promise you, there are OSHA inspectors in Mobile that when they drive by a job site that's in the middle of everywhere that everybody can see, and they don't see that scaffolding is done correctly, be prepared for a visit.
Okay.
Or you can have people like me.
There's a right and wrong way to do scaffolding.
Absolutely. There's a difference between what's called in our industry a competent person and what's called a qualified person. A qualified person has a certificate or what's like an engineering stamp that says he is qualified to design that scaffolding.
Okay.
Now, people who receive that training that we provide also says they are competent to be able to evaluate the situation for risks and safety issues, but they are not qualified to build it.
Okay.
And we show the difference
so two
between
levels.
The two. Yeah, and we provide that training as well. There are some other issues like lockout, tagout that involves electrical issues. There's a lot of times that, you know, power breakers or electrical hazards are there that people tend to forget about. And when they go and work on these big projects that involves lots of stored electricity, it has proven to be fatal.
Oh, yeah.
And we provide that training consistently. And we push it, how serious all these are, because in the regulations, it's called the 29 CFR 1926. The 29 stands for Department of Labor.
Okay.
1926 stands for construction. So this is what OSHA chooses to be their guidelines.
Okay.
It's about that thick.
Wow. And he's showing me about 6 inches thick here,
yeah,
on this document.
Yeah. And basically, unfortunately, all those regulations were written in blood. Everyone has died because of those regulations that have been in there. I personally don't agree with a lot of them, but it's not up to me. These are what they say the rules are. These are what they say people have been hurt, lost a limb, or have died from, and these are now the regulations.
This is the law.
The contractor. This is the law.
And so you're teaching the law. You're making people...
Yeah, there's no improvising. This is what the law says. This is what you have to go by. And then I can elaborate for my clients to be able to understand what exactly they're trying to achieve by having that one particular regulation.
All right, let's talk about the... You talk about customized. So yeah, it's probably best for somebody to just talk with you. You're going to get to come to the job. You got to see the job, right? To be able to offer the right training.
One of the things that we do, it's a four-step process. First thing we'd like everybody to do is schedule a consultation and tell us a little bit about your company. And between me or, you know, some people that work with us, we'll come out there and we'll evaluate the situation. Right now, I personally like to be the first one on site.
Mm-hmm.
So I can give my personal hey, this is what you need to do, don't need to do, this is what looks good, this is what could use some improvement. The second process of the four is we do the training. If you haven't had the training, that's what we're going to do. We're going to document also that we are in the process of training, and I'll provide the client with documentation in case they get a visit by OSHA. In the meantime, you can say, hey, we're working with Total Backing Safety. This is the training that we're doing. We're a new company, or we've had some issues before. This is what we're working on. OSHA is going to be a lot more lenient that way.
When they see you're taking some proactive steps.
Absolutely.
Right.
The third thing is, the third process is after the training, I want to come out to the job sites and see my students are implementing everything they've learned. I want to see a difference between before you took the class and after you took the class. And so do the project managers and the foreman and the superintendent.
Yeah, if they're having you there, they want to see that they're in compliance.
Nobody wants a fatality, but also the business side of it. Injuries cost money, and a lot of money, and they cost general contractors a lot of money in their insurance premiums. So I do work with the insurance companies directly on behalf of my client to let them know this is the training that I provide them, so now you can lower their rate.
Gotcha.
Right, and everybody likes that.
Yeah, big time.
And the fourth thing that we do after 90 days is I'll do an audit on everything I've trained the students to do, and I want to see the difference between before and after, and then I provide my client with those results. And 9 times out of 10, I continue to be able to get business that way because they see the type of level of work that we do for them, and they want to continue that, and they want to continue to not have any injuries or anything else that could happen negatively.
All right, so you're going to give them that report that says, you know, I did this training, and then I went back out and I saw Sullivan, he was using his harness correctly and he was locking out the electrical box correctly, those kind
Correct.
Of things.
And one of the things that I do that kind of led me to open up my own business was whenever I'm doing audits and inspections, you know, and this is nothing that my clients have asked me to do, I'll go up to a random employee that is doing something correctly that he is supposed to be doing. He's wearing the proper protective equipment correctly. He's doing his job correctly. You know, one thing that we like to do is reward good behavior, and we encourage that with the client as well. And I've been known several times to give out some gift cards to Bass Pro.
Okay, can I get on that job site?
That's right.
Hey, get out there. All right, somebody listening to us right now, they want to contact you. What's the fastest way to do this?
The fastest way to contact me would be info@totalbackingsafety.com. We're also on LinkedIn, and also my personal LinkedIn is there, Travis Bond. And you can call me directly at area code 251-222-3889, and I would be happy to take the time to sit and listen to how we could help you.
Good stuff. Travis, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, we're coming right back to wrap it up here on Midday Mobile on a Friday. And remember, check us out online. 53 hours a week of live local programming available to you in podcast form as well. Go to fmtalk1065.com. Just click that podcast tab and listen away.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Back in studio with Ruth Lichtenfeld from Taylor Martino. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
It's always good to have you here, and there's so much I want to talk about. The first thing, though, I want to talk about this because we mentioned it last time you were here, and I think it's something we got to point out that, or let me ask you the question. I'll set it up this way. Is it true that you are the only nurse who's also a personal injury attorney in our area?
Yes. To my knowledge, that's still correct.
So two dedications there take a lot of time through school, and you did them both.
Yes, I did.
This is obviously puts you in a unique situation when it comes to personal injury because you deal with the law, but you also know the physical injury.
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, like nurses, lawyers, especially those at Taylor Martino, were passionate advocates for those who need our help.
Yeah, I guess some of the tools you use will be different between the two, but yeah, you're helping people.
That's right. People still come to us when they're in need of help, be it nursing or the law. We assess their problem, we listen to their concerns, we do some research to figure out how we can help them through either medicine or the law, and then we execute our plan. We plan how to help them, applying the body of law knowledge that applies, and then we, you know, help that person.
And you're looking at injuries, there's injuries, physical injuries, but also as a personal injury attorney, you can see what that means going down the road. Well, I mean, that it might be a physical injury now, but you know what that injury is to future earnings or their quality of life.
Exactly. The negligence of others can impact the entire life of someone who's injured. It's the mental anguish, the pain and suffering, the effect on their relationship with their spouse, their children, their income. Maybe they can't work any longer. Maybe they can't do the same job, and so their earning ability decreases. It can be a tremendous myriad of issues that are caused by the negligence of others.
Well, you know, we picture this, Ruth, like we all have this picture of the arc of our life, right? Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do. I'm on my way. We're doing this, that, and the other. To be frank with you, none of us stop and think, well, what happens if that gets cut short? You
right.
know, I mean,
well,
it's just something we don't do every day. I know y'all have to do it at Taylor Martino because you deal with people that are seeing this, but this is real. This is real impact. These are real impacts.
It is. And we talk to people all the time who minding their own business, seatbelt buckled, going the speed limit, and somebody runs a red light on their text, they're texting or phoning or surfing the web while they're driving and run into our client, and their life is forever changed in many cases.
You know, I know at Taylor Martino, you'll pride yourself on the forensic ability in
right.
those situations.
Right.
Let's talk about that, because you had another seminar. Y'all constantly learning more and more about this.
Right.
Give people an idea how y'all deal with this, how you look into those situations where the person you just described, doing the speed limit, seatbelt on, doing right, they get hit.
Yeah, they get hit. And it's very important to contact us at Taylor Martino for a couple of reasons. We are your best advocate. Insurance companies are not going to look out for your interest, period. That's just not the other person's insurance. Your own insurance may be different. But you need to contact us as soon as possible so we can gather all the evidence we need against the person who caused the wreck. They are called the tortfeasor. And so we need to gather all the evidence as quickly as possible. There's so much technology available now that we can actually pinpoint the location of the tortfeasor's cell phone by getting forensic evidence, tower pinging the cell phone. We can download their data, their text messaging, all of that is date and time stamped. And so we want to be hired by the person who's injured as quick as possible so that we can gather all that evidence before the evidence starts to disappear by the tortfeasor because they get worried they're going to get sued. But there's a tremendous amount of information that we can gather, but it's important to get to us quickly so we can evaluate all the facts.
When you get that information, it must be a relief to your clients because I'm sure they're in these situations where they know they were in the right. The other person was in the wrong, but person say, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
It wasn't me.
I have rarely had a tortfeasor who said, yes, I did it. You know, take my insurance money. Their insurance company's job is to defend every single claim that the injured party, who is our client, can make. And so it's always an adversarial relationship. That's mm-hmm. why we recommend you don't talk to the other driver's insurance company. Don't do a recorded statement. Don't let them gather evidence against you. But just contact us. We have over 100 years, I think, of experience among all the lawyers. It may be 150. I don't want to date myself or my partners. but there's a lot of
wisdom.
Experience. Yeah, a lot of experience and wisdom. And with the advance of technology, you know, we are really, really, really very thorough, and we do not leave anything on the table. We are highly aggressive, and I've told people before not to underestimate me because I'm soft-spoken. You know, there's nobody that wants more than I to do what's best for the client and recover what they deserve.
And you said something there, too, that's just a takeaway for people to keep in there, that they need to talk to y'all before they take that call from the insurance company of the people that hit them.
Right, right, right.
But people don't know that, right? People think, they called, I got to talk to them.
We talk to people all day long. We screen calls. We tell you what we think. You know, can we help you? We want you to come in, sit down, and talk to us. We want you to know what your rights are under the law. Don't hesitate. We're never too busy to sit down and talk with you. If you have a question, do you have a case or not?
Let's talk about this, too. We talk about your uniqueness as a nurse who's also a personal injury attorney. We talked car wrecks, but that's a pretty big umbrella, personal injury attorney. There's a lot more that goes under that.
Yeah, it's a massive umbrella. There's personal injury from car wrecks, slip and fall in a grocery store and somebody's retail store. There's defective products like allergen breast implants or hernia mesh. There's pharmaceutical issues. We have cases where medicines have caused people to have cancer. We represent people in all types of personal injury. It doesn't have to be a car wreck.
But if they have an injury, like you said, you've been seeing them as a nurse for all those years and then so many years as a personal injury attorney. All right. So, Ruth, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, get an appointment to see you, how do they do that?
They can call me directly at Taylor Martino, 433-3131, or by email on our website, taylormartino.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.